The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast, where we pick our favorite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me this week, as usual, is founder of the Clever Car Collection, whatever that is. It's James Baggett.
It's a fantastically reviewed used car business, John, I'll have you know.
Is it? How many reviews now?
At least a mighty two reviews. Both of those, 5 stars.
Excellent. Getting
Excellent news. So, John, we've got lots to talk about, haven't we? But firstly, I just think we should just tell our listeners about our electric vehicle adventure last night.
I think we do.
So we had a leaving do for one of our esteemed colleagues yesterday. John and I decided to head across the water from Gosport to Portsmouth and use some form of public transport. And what they have over in Portsmouth are those electric scooters. And we had quite the journey, didn't we, John? So you can just picture this. This is John Ray of podcast fame with the most elaborate silver trousers on you've ever seen. I mean, they were incredibly high vis. For safety, obviously, he had a Burberry trench coat on and his trademark beanie hat on a bright orange electric scooter. But the best thing about this whole adventure was John was too scared to press the accelerator down all the way to the 20 kilometer an hour top speed it did. So you would have been quicker walking there, wouldn't you, John?
I would not have been quicker walking. It was definitely, it was very speedy, James. It's just that we don't all own Ducatis sat in the garage that we don't ride. So I'm not used to this two-wheeled mobility thing, and I quite like my face, and I didn't really want it to be in the tarmac.
You did get to say that. So, John, you've got to accelerate. You've got to go a little bit faster. I had to keep stopping to wait for you. And you said, no, I like my face too much.
And, you know, other limbs as well.
Yes.
Didn't want any.
Yes, it was an electric adventure, which will live long in my memory.
Yeah, what I'd also say, James, is that it cost more than us getting an Uber. So what was the point in that?
But it was great fun. It was great fun. We've had a busy week, haven't we? I've been out buying some cars. I picked up a Volkswagen Tiguan from Sunbury on Thames on Monday. Yeah, on Monday, which I'd bought from CarWow, which wasn't as described, but they were quite happy to take a little bit of a chip. Okay, I'm 20% of the price that I'd offered them in the first place. And I drove away a happy man, and they were £4,000 better off. So, that's now in my stock. And then Tuesday, we headed to Small Cars Direct, didn't we, in New Milton for an episode of our AI car dealership video. Popped across there to meet the team and chat to them about how they sell cars with very similar stock profiles to us, how they acquire them. I thought that was really interesting, Joy. It was nice to be. It was quite inspiring, wasn't it, to see a little business started in a very similar way and see how he's been very successful over the last 7 years.
Yeah, not to give too much away in the video, which we will publish shortly. But yes, very similar sort of start from home and then build yourself up situation, isn't it? I mean, did that inspire you to think, yes, what I really need is a little site like this with a nice sales office and all that sort of stuff?
Well, it scared me a little bit more than I've already been, if I'm honest. It's just I am finding, and I'm sure everybody listening to this knows it all too well, but selling used cars is risky, isn't it? And actually, you buy them, and more often than not, there are problems with them. And someone of my inexperience, I set myself up for a bit of a fall, unfortunately. And you just sort of, I am finding it quite scary. And doing it, I'm doing it in very small parts at the moment, in very small numbers, and hoping to build up. But I actually think when I go and see businesses like that, they've got 30, 40 cars in stock. And I asked him, didn't I? I mean, how do you deal with the stress of it? And he says, you just get a thicker skin eventually in the motor trade. I haven't actually got that just yet.
No, and you do deal very well with stress, don't you?
Oh, yeah, great.
Traditionally, that's why I'm very calm.
Gray hair. Very, very calm person. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's stop talking about what we've been up to. Shall we introduce our guest?
Yes, yes. So our guest this week is Julian Humphreys from Motum. Welcome back, Julian.
Yeah, glad to be here, John. James, yeah, thanks very much for the invite.
Nice to see you. Nice to see you once again. And I'm sure by now you've been on a couple of times. Everybody knows all about the Motum products. But I mean, it's probably best if we just focus a little bit on what you're seeing in the used car market at the moment. I mean, you're dealing in the supply and demand side of things, aren't you? What are you seeing? How's the new year kicked off for used car supply?
Interesting. There was an article that I think you guys pushed out about auctions being back in vogue and footfall returning to the auctions. I think that we're probably seeing virtual footfall returning and actually turn of the new year, seeing more of an active market than we did back end of last year. So back end of last year, we saw wholesale prices fall. I think they fell virtually 11% over the last 3 months of last year, which I think made some people nervous. But I think with kind of January books starting to stabilize, buyers are returning. And we had a really strong January, including electric vehicles, interestingly. So there's definitely appetite across the board. So, we've seen, as I say, strong January. Hasn't necessarily carried into February as of yet, but February is a strange month with half term, so take that with a pinch of salt to a certain extent. But we've started strong.
I've certainly seen in the prices of the cars that I've got advertised at the moment that actually they've been a little bit of an uplift actually in retail prices in February, not by much, but a little bit, which has got to be positive news, isn't it?
I think so. Absolutely. I think the fall, the wholesale market fall of the last 3 months of last year, I think, was a little bit of a surprise to everybody. But I think prices have stabilised, that's for sure. And that's why we're seeing buyers return, physical footfall and virtual footfall.
What advice would you have for me when it comes to stocking the dealership that I'm trying to build at the moment? I mean, what buying tips would you give me?
I think the challenge, or your biggest challenge, James, whether it's a challenge or I think it's the biggest one, would be matching your stock profile to where you think your customers are going to be. That and I would think that's the biggest challenge. And I'm not sure AI can necessarily answer that one for you, because you don't necessarily know who your customers are today. But you'd have a good idea of the part of the market that you would try to participate in. And I think the buying tips would be buy what you think your customers are going to need, yeah, or are looking for. And if you're in the enviable position of knowing that a few of your potential customers were looking for a particular type of vehicle, you could source it for them. I think that would be a great place to be. But I think stick to your original plan and don't deviate from it.
Yeah, funny you should mention the buying a car for someone. That's exactly what I've done. A friend of mine wanted a Vauxhall Crossland X. Won't hold that against him. But that's he wanted one for his wife. So I went out and sourced that for him. I'm driving to Llandudno in Wales tomorrow, leaving at 5 a.m. To pick up that car. But it was a case of he came to me, he'd seen what I'd been doing on social media and was desperate to find something. He knew he could have bought it from other dealers, but he wanted to deal with me directly. So it was quite a nice way of doing a deal, really.
Sure.
It's quite nice when people come to you and ask you to source something. It's a very different way of providing sales, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there's, and you'll know this, James, from your history in the market and what you're doing with the Clever Car Collection, that there are numerous places to buy cars. Make sure you've got them all open. Be they physical or digital. And because what you'll find across different avenues is you might find exclusive stock.
Yeah, it takes up a huge amount of time sourcing vehicles. I mean, that's so it's not about the sales, really, is it, in the used car business? It's about finding them and buying them. And it's a, I didn't realize when I got into this quite how much it would be weighted towards the buying side. I mean, I'm spending 90, 95% of my time trying to find and acquire stock and 5% of my time selling it. And I don't know whether that's just because it's me and it's new, but I'd be interested. What do you think the percentage split is for businesses normally when it comes to buying and selling, the time they spend on both?
I would think there's as much effort goes into both sides. Probably in equal proportions, that the buying activity is quite a skill, really, and as is the selling activity. The buying activity is laser focused on what stock the dealer needs or the group needs. Laser focused on where they can make the money and buy the right car. And I think there's as much skill in the buying as there is in the selling, and probably equal proportion in terms of activity.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you on that front. So tell us a little bit about how Motum's getting on. I mean, it's a difficult market you've entered, isn't it? I mean, there are lots of avenues to for people to buy and dispose of stock. I mean, explain a little bit about how it's working out for you guys.
Pretty well, I think, overall, James, would be my kind of assessment. And we there was an article that you guys put out for us, which was kind of the first looking back over the first 12 months. And we marketed 4,800 and something. Can't remember the exact number off the top of my head right now, but I think 74 vehicles over the year. So that was pretty good for us. What we've been able to do is continue to onboard new dealers, be they smaller operations like yourself or some of the Times top 100 dealers. So we've been able to continue to onboard. We've been able to continue to onboard some vendors where we bring different stock to dealers, which they might not necessarily see every day. And the other thing is that we've been able to deliver quick sales. So, for a seller selling a car at, a physical auction would take a number of days and potentially 2 weeks. On our platform, we're selling vehicles in under an hour. So what we're able to do is pinpoint exactly what the buyers are looking for, and through our technology doing the work and the search, pinpoint that vehicle to the right buyer.
Little elevator pitch opportunity for you. For those people who don't, we are not dragons. But for those people who haven't heard about the business, just give them a little bit of a pitch as to why they should consider trying out Motum.
So we're a technology business that connects buyers and sellers for cars and light commercial vehicles. We do that with a technology focus, which means the manual activity is taken out of the activity. So we match a buyer and a seller on the platform. So from a buying capacity, a buyer describes what type of vehicles they're looking to buy. As soon as vehicles hit the platform, that buyer gets an alert and can buy that vehicle in minutes or even seconds. From a selling perspective, we open up some different avenues for a seller to sell vehicles quickly. So vehicles can be sold quicker. It's greener because they're not traveling up and down a country to visit, let's say, a physical site or deliver vehicles to a physical site, and often the cash arrives in their bank account much quicker.
And explain to me where the challenges are with your business. I mean, it's not easy, is it, launching a new business? And I'm, you know,
No, sure.
the fact that you've been going a year is quite a testament, isn't it? I mean, just explain to me where the challenges are.
I think that, some of the challenges would be the market accepting a new brand. So that was our first pillar of activity, was getting getting a brand out into the market. So there was a degree of trust behind that brand. I think that was one of the things that, was pretty hard, and we work at that every day. So that's the first challenge. Second challenge is trying to get buyers and sellers to change existing behaviors and try something new and something different they might not have heard of. And, often we find from a selling perspective or a buying perspective, individuals and organizations say, well, we do it this way. Why would we want to look at something new? So it's a challenge to A, open the door and have the conversation, and then it's a challenge to get people to try. But what we're not saying to our audience is that it needs to be all or nothing, where you only use our platform, to sell everything or to buy everything. We're saying we're complementary to your existing processes. And equally, through technology, we make it easy for stock to be loaded into our system through API, where, once we agree a set of rules with a dealer, we can automate that process.
Yeah, and I think at a time when people are desperate for stock, it's worth trying lots of different avenues. So yeah, I can see why.
Yeah, and I think my overriding message was, give us a go, try
Yeah.
it. You might find some access to stock that you didn't have before. Equally, you might find you can sell some cars quicker than you would have wholesaled them through traditional avenues. So yeah, give us a go, why not?
Excellent. Elevator pitch. Closed. Brilliant. You can relax now. We'll move on to some stories.
I'd just like to say before we move on to some stories, James, that it's interesting. I just had a moment of how much you've changed in the last year, because the James that I know wouldn't have got on a flight to a launch unless it was a Rolls-Royce or a Range Rover or Porsche or equivalent
How
launch, and
dare
it would have been business class or first class only. And now here
you?
we are, and you're driving to Llandudno to make £500 on a Vauxhall Crossland X.
Needs
Quite a
must, John.
change. On a
Needs must.
weekend as well. It's active on weekend.
It's all in the cause of good content for Guardian magazine, John. You're welcome.
Oh dear. Okay. Well, James and I are going to run through our favourite stories of the week, and at the end, Julian gets to decide who chose the best stories and who is the winner. I won last week, so I'm going to start with a story that James is definitely going to want to talk about, which is CarWow and their big purchase this week. So very surprising news. Well, probably not for the people at CarWow who are planning it, but very surprising for us was the news that CarWow has purchased Autovia, or Autovia, however you say it, which is the sort of spin-off publishing company that owns Auto Express, Evo, Car Buyer, and there's an electric car publication called Driving Electric as well. So Car Buyer, Car Wow have swooped in and purchased them. I think they've been sort of up for grabs for a little while, haven't they? These were all ex-Dennis publications. Nobody listening particularly is very interested in the publishing world, I would imagine. But it's interesting to see what Car Wow is going to do with these particular publications, because Car Wow, as James has said in his interview in this particular story, CarWow is a disruptor. It's an online-only enterprise, isn't it? You would think comparatively low overheads, not really much in terms of physical presence. And they've gone and bought something that produces physical publications, and they sit in WH Smith's and Sainsbury's and wherever. Quite a legacy, if I can call it that, enterprise, isn't it? So interesting purchase, and I think it will be interesting to see what they actually do with it. James, what do you think the plan is?
Oh, I'm absolutely fascinated by this. I must admit, I was a bit sideswiped by this news. I had a phone call the day before it was announced from their PR team saying, would you like to have the exclusive on some CarWow news? And we've had that in the past, haven't we? And it's been interesting sometimes, not so interesting. So I said, yeah, that'd be great, but it would obviously depends on what the news is. And when the PR lady told me what it was, I was honestly shocked. I hadn't heard any news about this on the grapevine. Talking to some of our team who are out there on car launches and talk to other journalists, they had sort of picked up murmurings of this, haven't they? But they didn't actually know it was going ahead. So when this was confirmed, I was pretty shocked. But having chatted to John McManus, the CEO for the video, which you can watch on our YouTube channel, and for this story, I sort of, as I was chatting to him, I could see the pieces of the jigsaw kind of slotting together. From what I understand it, this was an all-share deal. They haven't actually confirmed that, but the rumours are this is an all-share deal. So no money has actually changed hands. Autovia was owned by Exponent, which is a private equity company. And as we know, CarWow has taken a lot of private equity cash over the years. I think the interesting thing for me is obviously Exponent think that the value in Autovia is worth more as shares in part of this wider CarWow group than it was on its own. Because if they've not cashed in on this deal in any way, they've got to see some benefit, some uplift by doing it as this all-share deal. So I think that firstly was an interesting point for me, that it was an all-share deal and this is going to be a big, they need this to get a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. Whether this means that one day CarWow floats, I think that's probably going to be on the cards at some stage. They clearly need to start making a profit, or do they? I mean, we've seen with Cazoo, a business that didn't make any profit for a long period of time, still doesn't now, float on the stock market in the States and raise £8 billion. So will CarWow follow that? Maybe this sort of helps them in some way. I started my career at Auto Express. I've got a lot of fond memories of that brand. It's a magazine that I read long before I joined. So it's nice to see it in new hands. And from what John was saying, they're going to invest a lot of time, effort, money into improving those brands. I think what we'll see is CarWow plugging its Sell Your Car product into those other brands like Auto Express and Evo, and probably Driving Electric and Car Buyer, because it's all more eyeballs, isn't it? That Autovia brands have 100 million extra eyeballs a year on top of the 65 million that CarWow already enjoys. So you add that all together, that's a lot of people who will be able to see CarWow and possibly want to sell their car via it. And as we know, it's very difficult to get those stock. And if you can get people start uploading their cars via this platform, even if they white label it, Sell Your Car via Auto Express or Evo, I think it could be quite successful. So it's going to be fascinating, as you say, to see how this one plays out. But yeah, massive news for the media world and big news for the motor world too.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a little bit of a clash in terms of the cultures of those two companies, isn't there? I mean, they've also expressed very traditional prints, get it out once a week, magazine full of news, and CarWow much more. Well, I mean, the funding for starters, you know, Auto Express has had to make money from, I assume, James, has had to make money from day one. You know, it hasn't really got a huge amount of, hasn't got private equity behind it. It's not got this strategy of growth. It is a magazine that has had to stand up on newsstands and make money, whereas CarWow is a little bit more focused on growing rather than profit. As you say, they're not yet profitable. So CarWow, I imagine, there's more of a culture internally of, a tech company. It's a tech company.
It is, yeah. It's
a tech company and a publisher coming together. This is despite CarWow having quite a lot of Auto Express ex-people. Well, I mean, there's quite a few ex-car dealer people working in CarWow as well in the editorial team, funnily enough. But I mean, Matt Watson, obviously, the CarWow recognizable face, is ex-Auto Express, isn't he? That's where he started. And he was there for a very long time. 10 years longer?
I'm not sure quite how long, but he used to be my boss when I was there. So, yeah. So,
There you go. But yes, interesting times.
Yeah. I mean,
Julian, what did you make of this?
I haven't seen the full interview, James, that you conducted with John. I saw some of the headlines. I've listened to some of it. I heard the numbers, the 100 million versus the 65 million. And I think John said it's 100 million incremental views, eyeballs, which is phenomenal when you think about it. Absolutely phenomenal. So just given that statistic, you can see where the attraction was. And if it's a share deal, makes it even sweeter, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think phenomenal from a new eyeball perspective.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head really with that one, because Carwell were obviously spending huge amounts of money on marketing, a lot of money on PPC. I mean, if you Google car reviews for the, for a Ford Focus, for example, then normally what car's top, then Carwow, then Auto Express, then Carbuyer, then Evo. Well, they've bought the top four there, haven't they? They own the top four of those five results. And the chances of those people then seeing the Carwell brand is so much huger. So I think
Absolutely.
it's probably a saving in PPC that they've seen that this is worth doing.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah. As
incredible.
you say, the incremental eyeballs of 100 million when you're getting 65 million. That's incredible growth.
Yeah, no, huge. Yeah, huge deal. We'll be right back. The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights. Right, I did have that one, John. It was definitely on my list, but I will move on to something a little bit different because I have got some others. And this is news published this morning that Close Brothers, the banking group that's listed on the stock market, has seen its shares tumble yesterday and over the last month as it scrapped its dividend amid fears over motor finance claims. So this was in a number of the national newspapers this morning. We covered the news too. And this is Close Brother Group's shares falling 22.5% on Thursday, or 90 pence. The group has now seen their market cap drop £700 million in the last month alone, with £130 million evaporating yesterday alone. So in an update to the stock market, Close said that they're now not going to pay a dividend for this year, which is going to save them £100 million as they set aside cash to build up, their words, capital strength. Close said in its statement that it is concerned about the FCA conducting this investigation into those historical discretionary commission payments. It's being prudent, say, putting this money aside in case of that. The bank said there's a significant uncertainty about the outcome of the FCA's review and the timing, scope and quantum of any potential financial impact on the group cannot be reliably estimated at present. So as we know, Close Brothers Motor Finance is a big name in the motor finance world. Of its lending book that it has, 20% of it is motor finance. It's £1.95 billion it lends at the moment in motor finance. So it's a big part of its business, and it's just this is the first business we've seen set aside money in case of this FCA investigation does start coming hammering those lenders. We know that that's probably come in. We know the FCA is investigating it. They're going back historically to 2008 on those discretionary finance commission payments that were made to dealers. We know Martin Lewis last week, we talked about it, the consumer champion, as he's well known, has set up a tool to help the public lodge these complaints with lenders. And I think in the first few days last week, 250,000 people did it. And he believes, this is Martin Lewis, that the claims for missold motor finance, again, his words, could be as big as the PPI scandal. So off the back of that, we're seeing the ramifications of what that means to those listed businesses. The biggest one, that were there some numbers in this, were Lloyds are going to be really up against it if this does start filtering through to other lenders. They could likely face a £2 billion hit off the back of these claims. They think Close, on the other hand, it could be anywhere in the range of £30 million to £830 million. Quite a range there. So how do you put aside money to cope with that? But I think the interesting fact on this one was quite how big this could be for the whole industry. RBC Capital reckons the bill could be anywhere between 6 billion and 16 billion. So quite a storm coming, I think, for motor finance lenders. And there'll be a lot of worried people in a number of boardrooms at those finance firms, I'm sure, as the FCA continues to investigate.
Incredible, really, isn't it?
Huge, I mean, numbers, aren't they?
You've covered it very well there. The other thing I would pick out here is that, you know, we're looking at Close Brothers here. Close Brothers don't exclusively do car finance, as you say. It makes up something like a fifth of their lending, doesn't it? So even something, an impact to one fifth of their business has had this effect. It's quite dramatic, really.
Yeah.
So you do feel for any more specialized lenders that are more focused on car finance in a way. Like, you imagine Lloyds will probably be okay. Lloyds, the enormous bank.
It does feel like the FCA, financial watchdog, has got it in for the motor trade a little bit at the moment, doesn't it? I mean, we've got these finance commissions investigation, and then off the back of that, a couple of weeks later, there's the gap insurance being told that they have to voluntarily withdraw it. 80% of that now disappeared from the market. No dealer in their right mind is going to be selling gap, really, knowing that there's an FCA investigation into it at the moment. And then you've got that motor finance piece. I mean, it's a huge headache. And I just feel that the motor trade is always just feels like a bit of a soft target for me quite a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how quickly it's snowballed, right?
Yeah.
And Close's share price and the statement this morning just shows you the severity of it, doesn't it?
It's huge. And I think, as I say, the ramifications for this are going to be massive for the industry as we go.
Yes.
Throughout this year. I mean, this investigation into motor finance commissions is not set to be completed until September. So we're talking quite a long period of uncertainty there until we get some answers. And about the same time, they'll probably come out with some information about GAP. I wouldn't be surprised if they wrap it up into one big wrecking ball for the motor industry when it comes out. I mean, it's not great news, I'm afraid.
No, agreed.
Right, John, get some positivity, please.
The positivity for you, James, is that you can't apparently offer any finance of any variety at all.
That's true.
But I'm going to move us on to some local dealer news, well, local-ish dealer news. And it's news that DM Keith, which is a group up in the north of England, has snapped up another group in the north of England, Colin Appleyard, which is mostly a Suzuki dealer group, isn't it? So I just thought this was quite a nice story because they're both family-owned enterprises, and DM Keith clearly doing very well. They've expanded quite dramatically over the last few years, haven't they? I mean, I think they were mainly Skoda and Seat once upon a time, and they've now bought various different enterprises like Ford, Ringways Ford, I think they own in Leeds, and so on and so forth. So this has got them a handful more dealerships. It's got them Suzuki, I think, for the first time. So Colin Appleyard had sites in Ashton-under-Lyne near Manchester, Bradford, Huddersfield, Keighley. And it's still owned by the Appleyard family. But my understanding in this story is that there's no one to hand the business down to going forward. So I think Robin Appleyard, who's the current custodian, has seen it's a good time to sell and put it in some safe hands somewhere else. But it's nice that it's going to another family-owned dealer group who are going from strength to strength rather than going to a big anonymous listed dealer group or similar.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the interesting one about this is I saw Dale Wyatt, the Suzuki director, commenting on the post on LinkedIn about this, saying how pleased he was that it was going into those sort of family hands. And he was very, very complimentary of the previous owners and complimentary about the fact that it's going into a nice, safe pair of hands with the new owners. So, yeah, I think the Suzuki brand it prides itself on those businesses, doesn't it, on those sorts of businesses, and is very successful as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can see that fitting in well with its new owners. Yeah.
Yeah, and an interesting one to pick out, John, that you know, a family business has been sold to a family business and there's no overseas investment coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite nice to be, you know, that family held still. And I saw Dale's comments as well, James. And I think he was, you know, it was a bittersweet moment, really, where, you know, sad the old family's sold, but pleased the new family's coming in.
Yeah, it was nice, wasn't it? Nice touch.
Yeah,
Nice touch
absolutely.
from Dale. He's a very good operator. Got a lot of
Yes.
time and respect for Dale. Right, I am going to move us on to similar sort of news, and that is from Hedin Mobility Group
Not a
has sold
family-owned
not a fan.
enterprise.
Well,
Well, it might
I don't
be.
know.
I don't know.
Yeah, Anders Hedin still very much involved in
True.
that business. Hedin Mobility Group has sold all of its shares in Pendragon after it pulled out of the takeover battle last year. And the reason I picked this one is I just find it a little bit strange that Hedin have sold all of these now, because if you remind yourself of that deal that was done between Pendragon and Lithia, they promised a special dividend that was going to be paid out in quarter one, I think it was, and I think that's now been pushed back to quarter two of this year as part of that deal. And because Hedin have now sold out all of their shares, they're not going to get that special dividend. So my question to you is, why were they so desperate to get their money back? And I've got a number of theories. Firstly, you just need to look at how much money they've raised. They've sold the equivalent of 1.69 billion Swedish krona, which is 128 million pounds worth of shares. I've been watching them do this because you obviously get notifications on via the stock market, and they've been doing it pretty much ever since that deal was announced with Lithia. And they've just been slowly seeding these back out into the market, selling them and reaping the rewards. But now they're completely sold up. So what do they buy next is my question to you. We know that Inchcape is on the block, ready to be sold. And I wonder whether they're just sorting out their bank balances, ready to make an offer for something bigger. I don't think 128 million would do the job there, but it would certainly make a dent in the purchase price, that's for sure. So I just wonder whether this is not the last we've heard from Anders Hedin and the Hedin team, and suspect there'll be an offer for one of these big dealer groups coming very soon.
It's either that or some smaller groups. But
Yeah.
in the, obviously they bid for Pendragon. That's not a small enterprise, is it? So I can see the natural logic is to go for one of the other big boys. But you never know, James. I'm
No,
just
you
they
don't.
could do a Marshall and kind of gradually pick their way into the market. Well, not
Yeah.
Marshall. Do that, but gradually expand it by picking up smaller groups.
I suspect Anders Hedin is not the kind of person who would want to do it that way. I mean, by putting a bid in for Pendragon as he did, and he teamed up, didn't he, with also with Penske for that offer, which I thought was quite strange. It meant they're obviously going to carve up that business between the two of them. So maybe he thought Pendragon at its current size was too big, and that's why he needed a partner to bid for it. And maybe something like Inchcape, which I think's got around 70, 80 dealerships in the UK, is more of his size. So I don't know. I'm guessing, but I suspect there's something coming soon.
Yeah, watch this space, I think.
Yeah.
Whilst the industry continues to consolidate.
I think we're going to see lots of that this year.
Yeah,
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
lots more of it.
Agreed.
Right, John, over to you.
Okey-doke. Jaguar Land Rover news now.
Ooh.
And it's news that Jaguar Land Rover's lead times for new vehicles, I should say, not repairs, have become far more acceptable, says Land Rover. Supply woes ease. So if you want a new Range Rover, apparently it's now a 6 to 9 month wait for a new car, which is much more like it, isn't it? That's a reasonable amount of time to wait for a car, particularly a Range Rover, which usually is probably built with very specific bespoke demands in mind. Compare that to, I don't know, a year or so ago, and it was like a 12 to, no, it was 18 to 24 month
18 to
wait last
24
summer,
months.
which is mad, which of course was driving prices of used Range Rovers up dramatically. So that doesn't seem to be happening anymore. They reckon that it's about 6 to 9 months for Range Rover Sport and Defender, which of course are their, well, I don't want to say the only things they're selling, but that is pretty much the only thing they're selling at the moment. So hopefully that will ease some of the pressure on the dealers. However, I don't know, I don't think this is particularly, there's not really any news on the parts issue in terms of repairs, is there? And we
No.
are still getting lots of emails along the lines of, my Range Rover is stuck in so-and-so waiting for a power steering part or whatever. And we've been told it's going to be a year before we get the part. So they've still got some quite unhappy customers in lots of ways, I think, haven't they? And this, of course, they still have the issue of security rumbling on. But some improvement, at least, at JLR.
Yeah, I mean, I was staggered by the fact that it was an 18 to 24 month lead time. Who waits 2 years to get their Range Rover? I mean, I like Range Rovers, but I mean, I don't think I could ever wait 2 years for any car. I mean,
but you're you. You can't wait 2 minutes for your triple combo in the Harvester.
No, that is true. That is true. I want that now.
Exactly. Exactly.
I am probably the world's most impatient man. So a 2 year waiting list is not good for me.
No.
I will move us on, John. I'll move us on. And I'm just going to pick up a story that we published at the weekend, a bit of a plug. And this is our Selling Supercars video, our latest video that we published on Saturday morning. So obviously after last podcast had published. And this was with Alexander's Prestige, which is the business based in Boroughbridge in North Yorkshire, run by Andrew North and Alexander Brimlow. We interviewed Andrew as part of this video, and he told us about how he's built this business, selling supercars. They've also got a fantastic workshop there and a body shop, and he loves to do everything in-house, and to the highest of standards, didn't he? I think the thing that really struck me was just the spotless showroom, the spotless cars. Everything was immaculate. The attention to detail at this business was fantastic. And I think it filled me with a lot of confidence. I mean, I would definitely buy a car from him. I think he's got an amazing business there. And just seeing the way that he prepares these cars to such huge standards, it was nice to see, wasn't it? And we filmed this quite some time ago, John, didn't we? We won't go into too much detail about that, will we? But yeah, we filmed this quite some time ago. But yeah, it's aged well, let's put it that way. He's got this nice name for this. For this concept that he runs his business by. He calls it The Unseen. And he's even got it on the logo of his business. And he says it's this principle that runs deep throughout the business, where they focus on the small things so everything feels right, is what he says.
Mm.
He says, not about what you do see, it's about the stuff that you don't see that they do anyway, which I just thought was a nice way to run a car dealership by, because it's not done by everybody that way. Let's put it that way. So yeah, an interesting video. It's performed very well on our YouTube channel. You can find it. It's called Selling Supercars with Alexander's Prestige.
Yes, I would urge you to go and watch. He's quite a character, isn't he? Well, I mean, they're all characters. The whole motor trade is full of characters. But yes, he was very kind of detail focused, wasn't he?
Yeah.
In a kind of very James Baggett-ish kind of way, I would say. I think
he reminded me a little bit like a Ron Dennis kind of, you know, that attention to detail where everything, like even the tiles had to be absolutely perfect.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that sort of thing. Or the you know, he had sort of branded soap and hand sanitizer and things, didn't he? It was he'd chosen the scents in all of those things. It wasn't just imperial leather.
Nothing wrong with imperial leather, John. But yes, please go and watch that video. Did you get a chance to see that, Julian? Have you ever come across Alexander's Prestige at all?
Yeah, I've come across them. Yeah, know a little bit about them. Not working with them, but yeah, I haven't had a chance to look at that video yet, James. But I think your words there probably encouraged me to view it over the weekend.
Oh, thank you. One more view, lovely. I'll take it. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know about our brilliant event we've got coming up on March the 7th. It's called Car Dealer Live 2024, and it takes place at the British Motor Museum at Gaydon. Well, we'll have a packed day of sessions to help car dealers, just like you, improve your business. Tickets are available now at cardealerlive.co.uk with a special rate for car dealers. On the day, I'll have headline interviews with franchise car dealer boss Peter Vardy and Big Motoring World Group's Peter Wardell. To find out more and book your tickets, visit cardealerlive.co.uk now. Right, back to the podcast.
So I've got bad news for anyone for owners of double cab pickups.
Oh, no.
Which is the news of a tax shakeup for, this is company car tax anyway. So HMRC is ending a tax break that made, well, one of the reasons that double cab pickups are so popular for people who drive them around and never put anything in the actual load bay. So, you know, the kind of Ford Rangers and Toyota Hiluxes of this world with their tricked out interiors and massive wheels and so on, that's the halcyon days of driving around in one of those for cheap has come to an end, because from July they will be classified not as commercial vehicles but as cars. So fundamentally that will make them much more expensive from a company car tax point of view. So there's a bit of a loophole at the minute, whereas if they're a commercial vehicle, it's much cheaper on your company car tax than if you were to go and buy a regular car. But now, because they're classified as vehicle as cars, they are charged on the benefit in kind, or whatever it's called, according to their CO2. And funnily enough, the CO2 output of these things is quite high. So suddenly they're going to get quite expensive. So I don't know if this is going to have, well, I think this will have a dramatic impact on, well, not to be Darren, and I'm not an expert on valuations, but that's surely going to have a bit of a hit, because there's a lot of, and this is just double cabs, single cabs are unaffected, but no one's driving around a single cab pickup, are they? So this is going to have an impact, I think, in terms of the values of Ford Rangers and Hiluxes and all these sorts of things that have become a bit of a status symbol, haven't they, in the way that it's a bit like having a budget Range Rover in a way. It's a big roughy tufty thing to drive around well, wherever, London, the country.
I think it's a bit of a shame, really, because I mean, you wouldn't really want to buy a pickup for any other reason than to do some work with it, would you?
Well, you say that, James. You say that, but actually, I think because they've got more and more comfortable, there was perhaps a time when a pickup truck was like an incredibly horrible way to get around, but now they are glorified cars, aren't they, in terms of the stuff inside them, and perhaps not the way that they drive, but you know, they're still pretty good. I mean, may I remind you, James, that you drove a VW California around as a normal car and never slept in it for 6 months because you liked the high riding driving position, which isn't a truck, but it is a big van full of a kitchen.
And very handy it was too when I was on a lunch break. Thank you, John.
I think that I don't know the scale of the issue here, John, in terms of the size of the market that goes into the company car driver. So I don't know if it's big news as a consequence of the size of the market. I wouldn't think that the used vehicle values will suffer, because if you think about it, it's not the buyer of the 3-year-old ex company car or ex company commercial vehicle, as they are now, soon to be ex company car. It's not the used buyer that's affected, it's the new vehicle buyer. So I wouldn't think that there's going to be anything dramatic in terms of the used values.
You make a good point, actually, because there's no changes to the VAT and so on if you're still a commercial vehicle from that point of view, confusingly, but it's purely new company car buyers are
going to be here. So I think it's probably the new supply that's going to be affected more than the used vehicle supply. So actually, if there is a significant market for a used double cab pickup, and there's less new car supply, actually, but you know, values might start to rise as a consequence of that. So there might be a small tickle. I don't think the market's big enough necessarily to have a huge impact. But what I did read was, because when I saw the headline, I thought that's really interesting. How about if I chose a double cab as my company vehicle 6 months ago and bought it or leased it, bought its company vehicle based upon the rules at the time, what happens? But yeah. I understand anybody who's in a double cab pickup as a company vehicle gets grandfathered anyway. So until 2028 or something like that, I think the headline was.
Yeah, I think as long as you're in it before July this year.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
there doesn't seem to be a problem with it.
Yeah.
But right. Yeah, strange tax loophole being closed. Well, it's not really a loophole, is it? It's a strange bit of grab from HMRC there. I think.
Yeah, well, they're not taking the income they thought they would from company cars, are they? Because they're given the huge incentives on EVs.
Yeah.
Should I move us away from payloads and awful to drive cars? And I'm going to move us on to my last story, John, because you've stolen most of mine. And that is news that the UK slid into recession after output shrunk more than expected in the last two quarters of 2023. So this was news that came out yesterday, no, Wednesday, that in the last quarter, output fell 0.3%, which meant that we had two quarters in succession where growth was negative, which is obviously a technical recession. But I just want to spin this into a slight positive, if I can. And that is the commentary that has come out since that actually shows that economists have said that that news was overly dramatic, were their words. And to label the UK's economic dip as a recession, but highlighted that the latest data shows the country is currently actually a stagnation nation. I mean, what on earth does that mean? Oh dear.
That's what you're going to see. You know, like when you go to an airport and they've got adverts for other countries. I think that's what we'll have in, I don't know, you know, Paris Charles de Gaulle Airport is visit the stagnation nation.
UK, come to the stagnation nation.
Yeah. Hop on a Eurostar, come and stagnate with us.
I mean, I said I was going to give this some slight positivity. And those experts have also suggested that the conditions could actually be slowly beginning to brighten in the economy, despite those gloomy updates. So, I think that the reason I picked this is, yes, it is a technical recession. You know, that is how it works. But I think that anybody who's operating in the motor trade would have quite clearly said that the end of last year was quite difficult, and they could have spotted that this was coming a mile off. But the new year does seem to have started a lot more positively. Julian, you mentioned that at the start of our conversation. We've seen it from a lot of suppliers, and we've seen it from a lot of the motor traders we're talking to. So hopefully this is going to be a very short-lived recession, and in this first quarter of this year, we'll be bouncing back into positive growth. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think many are surprised, James, that, you know, we hit technical recession, because I think consumer spending was at a low. You know, high streets were complaining week before Christmas that consumer spending was particularly low, so I don't think many people are surprised that it's a technical recession. There's a cost of living crisis still with us. Mortgage rates are, while some are coming down, some are still going up. And I don't think we've seen all of that hit the market yet. So I think there's still some headwinds out there. So falling into technical recession, I don't think surprises many people.
No, I think this does give some scope, though, for the Bank of England to start tackling those interest rates and maybe bringing those down. And as soon as that starts to happen, as soon as the home market, you know, housing market is given a bit of a kick and people start moving again and seeing the house prices rise again, that only serves to make people feel more confident and up for buying things like their next new car. So
absolutely, yeah. Yeah, which is the second biggest purchase that most people make in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
right, John. That's
what I should ask you, James. I should ask you about your barometer of the economy, which is a harvester on a Thursday night. How busy?
Actually, John, I think you'll find it was harvester this Monday night, and how busy was it, John? It was incredibly busy. I'll answer the question for you. And that means that we are out of recession, and people are buying chicken once again.
Oh dear, Bernard Matthews will be thrilled to hear that. I'm going to squeeze one more story at the end just to make fun of you. I'm going to talk about the fastest selling used cars according to data from Auto Trader. So the Kia Exceed has been named the fastest selling used car in the UK. It was the model took an average of 14 days to sell between January 15th and February 11th. James, would you like to know what the slowest selling model is? You know what it is.
I do know what it is, yep.
It's the Vauxhall Crossland X.
Excellent news. Well, I'll have you know, I've brought those average figures down because I sold it in no days. So, you
What
know,
you hope.
I bought it and sold it on the same day. So put that in your figures, AutoTrader. And that'll be one for the Crossland X people out there.
Well, you better be pretty confident that it's not going to be handed back to you, is all I'm saying, because otherwise
God, don't say that.
you're going to have it
John.
for 75 days on average.
Oh, God. No wonder it was being sold on a trade platform.
I mean, it's
Yeah.
like a premium. The second slowest, interestingly, Range Rover.
I wonder he bit my hand off when I offered him 8 grand for
All
it.
making sense now. That's all my
Okay.
stories.
Excellent. And I'm out too.
Good. So, Julian, what were your favorite stories that we have covered this week? Or favorite story, if you can narrow it down to one.
Yeah, there's a few to choose from, but I think the DM Keith acquisition of the Colin Appleyard business probably stands out for me, that one family-owned business has now gone to another family-owned business, and culturally it might not be too much of a jump for everybody involved. And when I say everybody involved, I mean the people who have been in that business and running that business for many years. So that would be the one for me, where it's not a overseas investor that's got a completely different culture and different approach that everybody's got to work with, where you'd kind of think a family business sold to a family business is a nice thing.
Absolutely.
And we talked about Dale Wyatt's comments earlier in the podcast, and I think that new business or the people in the Apple Yard business should take some real comfort from that as well. So I think that one for me stands out because it's all about people.
Well, that sounds like a hat trick for you, John. Three
Oh.
in a row. I need to have a word with myself.
I know.
Awful,
It'll
awful
all change.
performance.
It'll all change. Well, thank you very much, Julian, for that win. I'm sure it'll be downhill from here. But thank you for judging, and lovely to have you on as ever.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me, inviting me on. Thank you.
No worries.
Always a
Nice to see
pleasure.
you.
And thank you as well to James.
You're welcome. We've got to go and pick up a yellow Fabia now, John. Let's do
God. Okay.
it.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. So make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you want to check out the stories we mentioned today, take a look in the show notes below or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk. Thanks for listening and goodbye.